I'm 54 years old, and, you know, I'm an American playwright. I've been writing plays for 30 years. And I think that there was a part of me that felt, well, the big three, Streetcar, A Long Day's Journey Into Night, and Death of a Salesman, are family plays, and they're, you know, sort of an old kind of, they're plays that I revere. Wouldn't it be interesting to write a big family drama?
Your new play is The Intelligent Homosexual's Guide to Capitalism, Communism.
The Intelligent Homosexual's Guide to Capitalism and Socialism with a Key to the Scriptures.
Thanks.
Around 1997, my grandmother, my father's mother, died in Louisiana, where I'm from. I went down to Louisiana to help my father pack up, and one of the things that I found, I'd never even heard of it, was this book that Shaw wrote called The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism and Capitalism, which I thought was just a wonderful title. And I decided on the spot that I was going to use the title, but I changed woman to homosexual.
There's this whole huge question of, you know, sort of unionism and the labor movement. It's one of the big themes, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically the play is about a retired longshoreman who is also a member of the Communist Party. I mean, it's very much a play about unionism. It's a play about communism and Marxism and socialism, despair and death, and it's about sex. It's a big play.
So this question of unionism is so politically current, and it is exactly landing when the discussions, you know, are going to sort of start to be working in a frenzy in New York and other states about what should public sector workers get.
One of the things that I think galvanized me to write the play was the stagehand strike on Broadway. I was shocked to hear people who were playwrights and actors and, you know, I thought progressive people sounding like, you know, you should pardon the expression, I think I can say uncharacteristically sounding like Reagan Republicans, like Patco era, you know, union smashers.
Without sort of going into easy shorthand about who's at fault, I spent a lot of time out in the swing counties before these elections, and one of the things that kept coming up as a theme is, I have nothing. I have lost my job. I'm eking by, or maybe I'm partially employed, and the taxes that I do pay are going for these other people to have this thing that I don't have. And I'm wondering, you know, how you speak to that.
Well, you know, I mean, it's terrible that you have nothing. You should be angry. Really look at where the money's gone. Look at the fact that the discrepancy between the poorest in our country and the richest in our country is greater now than it has ever been in our country's history.
In Angels in America, Lewis says to Pryor, what does it feel to be a child of the zeitgeist? Do you think that you've ever really been able to answer that?
There's no way to actually, I mean, we're all, of course, childs of whatever zeit we happen to be geists of, or whatever the geist of our particular zeit, I should say, happens to be. The ultimate aim of art, I think, is to resurrect the dead. And it's what Orpheus tried to do, and that doesn't succeed. You can't do that. I think the failure is what we call art. I mean, you know, really great failures, really deep, rich, spectacular failures are the deep, rich, spectacular works of art of our time.
So I was so convinced that Angels in America was a play of its time. But what surprised me when I saw it in late 2010, early 2011, was that none of that punch was diminished. Why do you think that is?
Why do we still watch A Doll's House? I mean, liberation, in a certain sense, is specific and also very much universal. It's political, but it's also personal.
The very final scene where they're at the Bethesda Fountain, and the theme of that is sort of, we've found our way out. We're sort of oriented towards the light. And then I really started to feel very upset because I thought, we didn't know anything then. I mean, those problems seem so grave, and now look. And, you know, when we sat down and shortly after that was written, and I said to you, are you optimistic? And you said, oh, you have to have hope. So how do you feel now?
Well, I feel the same way. I mean, I think I may have said it first to you, that I think that hope is a moral obligation, and I've been saying that for a long time now. I don't think that hope is just a feeling state. I think that hope is a choice. When I wrote the epilogue was very important to me to show that Pryor, 5 years later, was still alive. And I remember the way that Steven Spinella did it. It had this incredible sense of life refusing to let go.